Hello, you are listening to Norpod, a podcast brought to you by ArabsForChrist.org. Hello, today we're going to be talking a little bit about different misconceptions or things that you need to be aware of when witnessing to your Muslim friend that you probably haven't heard of anywhere else. One thing I want to mention at the first start is we're going to talk about shirk. Now the word shirk, another word that's similar to that is shirki, which means to share, is like a corporation. To shirk, to share. So like for instance, I want to share something with you. So, but in this word shirk in Islam means to share something with God. Another way you could put that is to put something with God, to bring something up to divinity. Mostly they'll quote this. Let's see here. Okay. And the Jews say, Uzair, or Ezra in the quotations there, is the son of God, and the Christians say Messiah is the son of Allah. That is their saying with their mouths, resembling the saying of those who disbelieve aforetime. Allah is cursed beyond them, how they are deluded away from the truth. They took their rabbis and their monks to be their lords besides Allah. And it says in parentheses, by obeying them in things which they made lawful or unlawful according to their own desires and without being ordered by Allah. And Messiah, son of Maryam, while they were commanded to worship none but one ilah. And it says after that, la ilaha illa huwa, which means there's no God but He. Praise and glory to Him for having the partners associated with Him. Okay, so let's go through this really quick. Okay, so basically they have the idea that we have joined Jesus to God, or that we have joined monks, or in this case of Jews, rabbis to God. Also, you see here, like I said, the verse before it says that the Jews used to believe that Ezra was the son of God. I don't really know how historically true that is, but they try and say that we connect Jesus to God. They have a very, very big misunderstanding of how we view Jesus. You'll hear everything from them believing that we believe God had a physical relationship with Mary, and then Jesus was born, begat, whatnot, to us believing in three gods. So you'll see these things. Now, shirk is the one sin in Islam that cannot be forgiven. So this is a very big issue. When talking with a Muslim, you know, you can find some things, you might even be able to convince them of different things, but once they're able to really admit that Jesus is the Son of God, that's when you know something big has happened, because in Islam, the Quran says many times, God has no son. We don't believe God has a physical son either. However, by them confessing that Jesus is the Son of God, they have in fact became an apostate. So this is a very big point to notice. Okay, now let's get one verse before this. By the way, I'm looking in Surat Tawbah Tisa, and I'm looking at, let's look at verse 29 for a second. Fight those who believe not in Allah, nor in the last day, nor forbid that which has been forbidden by Allah and His Messenger, and those who acknowledge not the religion of truth, i.e. Islam, among the people of the scripture until they pay the jizya with willing submission and feel themselves subdued. Just for the fun of it. Anyhow, this is important because we see here, قاتل, here it says in Arabic, قاتلوا الذين لا مؤمنون بالله وباليوم الآخر ولا حرامون بالحرام الله ورسوله ولا يدينون أدينا الحق من الذين الوعدوا إلى كتاب حتى يدعوا إلى جزية عن أيد وهم صغارون. Okay, you have to read it in Arabic and English, because in or in the Islam, of course, if it's not in Arabic, it's not authoritative. Okay, so it says they, you must, in the English translation, it says you must fight them until they pay the tax with willing submission and feel themselves subdued. We see very clearly, you know, fight against those that do not believe in God or in the last day, you know, who do not forbid that which was forbidden by Allah and the Messenger. For example, as Christians, we feel we can eat pork. As Jesus said, nothing makes a man unclean that enters in through his mouth. What makes a man unclean or impure is what exits from his heart. And so we can eat these things without worrying about it dirtying our soul. But in Islam, of course, that's a big no-no. So it says to kill or fight those people. And so, okay, what's the point of me saying these things? Well, when you're in the Muslim culture, you really do gotta kind of watch out for all these things. You gotta watch out for what he made forbidden, haram, and what he made halal. And it just, because if you're doing something that's, for example, if you're eating a bacon cheeseburger in front of a Muslim, it's gonna make it a little bit more offensive. Anyhow,
actually
was sung at my ordination in Rock Springs a couple of years ago, written by a brother named Bill. This song really has a lot of meaning for me and Jimmy whenever we hear it. At first we used to joke about it, but I don't know, I've thought about it a lot. It's a real lovely song. It really is edifying as well. It just kind of reminds us it's not, well, you'll see. May the Lord bless you through.
But Jesus said, "Peace be unto you, as my Father has sent me, so send I you. So send I you to labor unrewarded, to serve unpaid, unloved, unsought, unknown, to bear rebuke, to suffer scorn and scoffing. So send I you to toil for me alone. As the Father sendeth me, so send I you. So send I you to bind the bruised and broken, or wandering souls to work, to weep, to wake, to bear the burdens of a world aweary. So send I to suffer for my sake. So send I you to loneliness and longing, with hearts hungering for the loved and unknown, forsaking home and kindred friends and dear ones. So send I you to know my love alone. As the Father sendeth me, so send I you. So send I you your lives and vision, to die to desire, self will resign, to labor long and love where men revile you. So send I you life to mine, So send I to hearts made hard by hatred, to eyes made blind because they will not see, to spend through weary blood, to spend and spare not. So send I
interesting for you all to share a few thoughts from the Hadith with you all. Many of you that are just getting involved or just starting to listen to this program are learning some things about Islam, and you might not be aware, but the Hadith is considered very important. It teaches a person how Muhammad lived his life and also how Muslims should live their life. So with that said, I'd like to read. This is a Hadith from Riyad us-Salahin, and it's compiled by Imam Abu Zakaria Yahya bin Sharif and An-Nahwaniya. I don't know how to say that because it's in Latin letters. It's kind of a little bit tougher. For speech, I guess I don't know if I need to say this in Arabic as well as English, because I'm not sure how many of you listeners are able to comprehend it just yet, as I know the Hadith is very tough. Anyhow, in English, it says, regarding art. Once when the Holy Prophet returned from a journey, he saw a curtain containing pictures hung on a platform in front of my house. On seeing this, the Holy Prophet became angry, and his face changed color, and he said, O Aisha, on the day of judgment, those persons who copy Allah's creation will most severely be punished. So I tore it up and made one or two pillows covers for from it. And again, it says, this is from Hazrat ibn Abbas. He says that he heard the Prophet say, every artist will be put in hell. For every artist, there will be a person appointed in respect of every one of his pictures, which he made in the world, who will punish him for it in the hell. Yes, it does say the hell in the English translation. And Ibn Abbas adds, if it is avoidable, unavoidable, draw pictures of trees and lifeless objects. Anyhow, it's kind of interesting. You know, as we know in the Ten Commandments, one of the commandments is you should not have any idols. You should not make anything of any image of any likeness of anything in heaven or on earth, nor shall you bow down to it. Islam takes a step further, saying you can't have any kind of pictures. And it says, you know, like I said before, it says, all artists will be punished in hell. I mean, it's kind of, again, Hasrat ibn Mas'ud says that he heard the Holy Prophet say, the severest punishment will be meted out on the day of judgment for artists. Again, it's kind of strange probably for us as Westerners to hear these kind of things, but it's really makes a great strong point against art. These are Sunni hadiths, by the way, and so these things don't necessarily apply to Shia. So that explains quite clearly why there's very much a lack of art of paintings in the Middle East, especially you know after Islam. So this is something to consider if you're a missionary in the Middle East or wanting to go to the Middle East. You need to keep in mind that all pictures are forbidden. I mean, so example, if you have any kind of diagrams, the Jesus film, for example, or booklets, cartoons, generally these things are forbidden and are not correct. However, mostly you'll find it most contemporary Muslims, moderate Muslims, Muslims that are not necessarily religious will not have a problem with these. However, if you're wanting to witness to people that are wearing a beard longer than my own, you're going to have to probably find other avenues. I find it especially helpful if I'm doing something like passing out the Jesus film to make sure and give it a point to tell them that it's not something of worship. You'll find oftentimes in Muslim countries the only idea of Christianity they have is Catholicism. And so they'll see these little images of these icons of Mary that people go and they kneel before, they cross themselves, and they pray to the little image to Mary to intercede for them or whatnot. You need to make sure to distinguish yourself from these things. You need to make sure, if you are showing them the Jesus film or something, you need to make sure and tell them this is Ramsiyan, this is symbolic. It's not something, it's idolatry, it's symbolic. And you need to make sure and make sure they understand that. So another cultural note I'd like to finish this little section off of today is about dogs. You know, I think most people in the States don't realize how dirty dogs are in the Muslim mind. Again, in the hadith it says in number 1685, Hazrat ibn Umar relates that once Angel Gabriel promised to visit the Holy Prophet, but he took considerable time in coming, and this waiting proved to be very irksome to the Holy Prophet. When he came out of his house, he met the Angel Gabriel and complained to him on being late. He said, "We do not enter the house in which there is a dog or a picture." Okay, so in Islam, we just learned, there's two things we just learned from this. First of all, that pictures, you know, as we learned a second ago, are something that will condemn someone to hell in Islam. And also, a picture, as well as a dog, can prevent an angel from entering the house. So basically, if you're trying to serve in the Middle East, you know, you do got to kind of go, you want to be somewhat, I'm not trying to say you want to change gospel, absolutely not, but if you could do things to help make it easier for them, like not having a dog in your house or not having a big cartoon picture of Jesus or something that's obviously, you know, you got to choose, be deliberate with things. When I'm looking around in my house and here, I see, well, mostly barren walls, but I see a calligraphy thing in Arabic of the Lord's Prayer and the photograph thing of some shepherds and whatnot. I really have a hard time. I don't think I would be able to actually keep a Catholic icon thing just because of conscience sake, even if I wasn't out here. But generally, I mean, you got to be very intentional with what you're going to choose, because when they're in your house, they're going to be judging you based on these images. So what are you presenting? You know, what are you presenting with what you're wearing? Ladies, are you presenting the gospel by wearing those short clothes or tight things where it shouldn't be tight or whatnot? You know, are we presenting the gospel correctly? Are we, you know, with even bumper stickers, every single thing, we need to be very intentional with what we do, with what we wear, with how we present ourselves. Going on, just another little note about the dog thing. It says, Hazrat Aisha says, Angel Gabriel once promised to visit the Holy Prophet sometime during the night. When the time came, Angel Gabriel did not turn up. The Holy Prophet had a stick in his hand, which he, in utter disgust, threw away, saying, "Allah and his messengers never commit a breach of promise." Then he noticed a dog lying underneath his wooden seat and asked, "When did this dog come in here?" He said, "Oh, by Allah, I did not see it come in." He directed it to be put out, and it was accordingly driven away. Probably beaten with that same stick, but anyhow. The angel Gabriel came, and the Holy Prophet said to him, "You had promised to visit me, and I sat waiting for you, but you did not come." He said, Gabriel, that is, "It was this dog which kept me away from coming to your house. We do not enter a house in which there is a dog or a picture." So again, you know, you see exactly the same kind of story as before. So, you know, you just got to keep in mind, you know, with Muslims about this whole thing. One more thing about dogs before I close this little section off here. Hazrat ibn Umar relates that he heard the Holy Prophet say, "A person who maintains a dog, except for game or guarding cattle, shall be deprived of 2 kirats of his merit every day." And according to another tradition, this quantity is 1 kirat. I'm going to read this one in Arabic just because I don't know what a kirat is, and if there's any other Arabic English speakers, maybe you don't either. On Ibn al-Amr الله إنهما قال سمعت رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم يقول من أقطع كلبا لا إلا الكلب سعيدا أو ماشية فإنه يتنقص من أجري كل يوم قرية متفق عليه وفي الرؤية okay. Oh yeah, it's the word here, kirit, is actually the Arabic word, qariyatan. Well, so that doesn't really answer my question. Anyhow, I'm going to be going through, and we'll be doing more of these in time, and I think they'll be hopefully helpful for you and for me in learning more and more how we can understand our Muslim neighbors and folks that need the gospel. So please, if you have any questions about this or concerns, feel free to get in touch with me at arabsforchrist.org. Thank you, and God bless you.